In the spring of 1919, the General Inspector of Public Safety, Giovanni Gasti, handed in the report he had been compiling on the man he had been following, Benito Andrea Amilcare Mussolini. Benito Mussolini is of strong constitution, although he suffers from syphilis. This strong constitution allows him a strenuous work schedule. He rests at home until late in the morning. He goes out around midday, but he does not come back until 3 o'clock in the morning, and these 15 hours, with brief pauses for meals, are dedicated to the activity of journalism and politics. He is a sensual man, and this is demonstrated by the many relations he has with various women. He is emotional and impulsive. These characteristics make him suggestive and persuasive in his speeches. Although he speaks well, we cannot really define him as an orator. He is, deep down, a sentimental man, and this wins him many sympathies and friendships. He is disinterested, generous, and this has given him a reputation of altruism and philanthropy. He is very intelligent, careful, measured, and thoughtful, with a good knowledge of men, of their qualities and their defects. He is quick to like or dislike, capable of sacrifice for his friends. He is persistent against his enemies and in his hatreds. He is brave and audacious. He has organizational skills. He is capable of quick determinations, but he is not otherwise tenacious in his convictions and proposals. He is highly ambitious. He holds the conviction that he represents a considerable force in the destiny of Italy, and he is determined to put it into practice. He is a man who will not accept second-level positions. He wants to be first and to dominate. It is certain that, as an adversary, Mussolini, a man of thought and action, an effective and incisive writer, a persuasive and lively orator, could become a leader, a formidable hitter. In the last episode, we tried to give a definition of what fascism was. And we came up with the idea that to start with, fascism was Benito Mussolini. His actions and the patchwork of ideas he took from various sources. And that it is only with the death of Mussolini in 1945 that we can really start to define what fascism means. Because it is after that date that we can call it a defined ideology. Before that, it was just the description of the actions of a man who created something that then perhaps he lost control of. Today, we're going to have a look at the life of Benito Mussolini up until 1921, when the Fascist Party was created 100 years ago. As always, I am joined by Matteo Marconi for this discussion. So, Matteo, we could say that from the very start, Mussolini was sort of destined for something, because starting with his father, Alessandro, things were already, let's say, unusual. He was a socialist, a convinced socialist, and indeed he gave his son Benito three names. We know it was Benito Amilcare Andrea Mussolini. Benito for Benito Juarez, a Mexican revolutionary. Amilcare for Amilcare Cipriani, and Andrea for Andrea Costa. Three people who were definitely not right-wing, Matteo, I would say. So
no,
from the very start, we see a socialist family.
A lefty family. He was his father was a blacksmith. His names were related to a Mexican revolutionary, and Andrea and Amilcare was two members of the Socialist Party. But in the ideals of socialism in that period and in that place, which is Romagna, there was a strong belief in Republican ideals. Republican Party was a very important nationalist party who fought for independence of Italy in the late 19...
Yeah, so we know that Mussolini was born 29th of July 1883. So we're talking, yes, late 19th century.
And in that place, there were very strong ideas for the independence of Italy. And his father was a socialist, but he was a follower of Mazzini.
Mm-hmm. Giuseppe Mazzini,
who fought from the late
1850s,
for the independence of Italy when Italy was not a nation.
So a member of the Risorgimento, which is the movement that created the unification of
towards
Italy.
An Italian identity. And so in the beginning of the life of Mussolini, we have two different, quite strange ideals. Socialist, which is internationalist, and republicanism, Italian republicanism, which is a nationalist movement.
So from his very stark, a stark contrast in the family.
There was a bipolar from the beginning of his life.
Bipolar to start with, okay.
In Italy, we have this strange connection between left, some kind of left party, and nationalism. The Republican Party in Romagna, in which he was born, was
strongly anti-clerical. And indeed, we know that Mussolini had a very strong anti-clerical upbringing, despite the fact that his mother was very religious. But Mussolini was, at a certain point, he was a very difficult child, quite a violent child, always getting in fights, always getting in trouble. And so his anti-clericalism started early because he was sent to a Catholic school. And in this Catholic school, they would divide the students according to their social level. So according to your social level, when you went to lunch, you would be divided among the richer class, the middle class, or the poor class. And Mussolini resented very, very much being put in the poorer class and seeing this social division in action at a very young age as well.
Yes, in the beginning he suffered from this some kind of segregation.
Yeah, absolutely.
His life began with frustration at the beginning because he felt that he was torn apart from the other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he suffered from the beginning of this exclusion. And he had this strange family in which his mother was
a devout Catholic,
and his father was
a devout socialist.
Anti-clerical.
Yeah, very, very anti-religious, anti-clerical in all figure.
Along his life, you will see this kind of a contradiction in his life, in which in some way prevails the movement toward Catholicism, and the ideas of anti-clericalism just in the beginning, and in some way he chose what he needed, moving towards power.
Yeah, exactly. Again, as we mentioned last time, the objective was to reach power and to maintain power, basically. So, difficult childhood, or let's say in a certain sense a violent child, difficult child. At a certain point, he does manage to graduate. He is educated as a teacher, as an elementary school teacher, although at the beginning he has trouble finding work. And in the end, to avoid his military service, he escapes to Switzerland. And there he lives in often difficult situations, sometimes also as a homeless person, you know, sleeping out under bridges.
A refugee.
As a refugee in a certain sense. Although here he starts to... he starts his activism with the Socialist Party in his Swiss exile, let's say.
He began to take public speeches with Italian workers, socialist workers, in which he had so strong speech against religion, and in a very famous episode.
Yeah,
he asked God to.
Yeah, he said, if God exists, he will strike me down now.
And God
didn't strike him down. it could have been, everything could have been better.
It was the right time.
If the Almighty had been listening in that moment, things could have gone a lot differently.
And he went to jail because he had documents.
He had false documents.
Some trouble. He had fights He was a convicted felon.
That's one thing we must know, that during his lifetime, Mussolini did spend time in prison, in Switzerland and in Italy. But we were saying, in Switzerland, he started, in a certain sense, as you were saying, Matteo, his political career, or his career, let's say, as a public figure, and started to show some of his oratory skills, giving these speeches. He learned French while in Switzerland.
German,
which allowed him then, when he returned to Italy, to teach French as well as a profession.
Yes, and he began to write in newspapers, in a local newspaper.
He started his activity as a journalist.
And he was quite skillful as a journalist, because there are lots of books you can find here in Italy, which of Dante Alighieri or... Boccaccio, which the preface is written by Mussolini.
So editions of Boccaccio and Dante with
Dante
the preface
and
by
Machiavelli. Machiavelli. Uh-huh. I have a book of Machiavelli printed in the 20s, and which preface was written by Mussolini. It was quite.
He's quite a good writer. Quite a good writer. At a certain point, he returns to Italy after his Swiss exile. He manages to find teaching jobs, also in our little province of Reggio Emilia.
Yes, Gualtiere, near us, 20 kilometers from here.
From here, in a little town called Gualtieri. And then one thing we need to look at is his position on the war. So 1911, we have the war in Libya. So at first... Mussolini comes out as, I don't want to say a pacifist, but an anti-war, he comes out with an anti-war position.
Yes, he thought that the war in Libya, which was made to create an empire for Italy, was a sort of imperialist war. He opposed very much this kind of choice. And it was a very strong position against war, and he spoke in public lots of time, and he wrote lots of articles against this choice that brought to war in 1911 in Libya,
exactly.
Which was the first war in which we used air bombing.
Mm-hmm,
the Italians created this beautiful thing.
Yes.
Bombing campaigns
on those very, very dangerous Ethiopians.
Libyans.
On those very, very dangerous Libyans. Yes, exactly.
Terror bombing.
Terrorist attacks, strategical bombing.
Yeah. Now we call it strategical bombing.
Yes,
it was just to terrify the population.
Exactly. Yeah. So in this early period, he also has his first experiences as a political. A leader in Trento, for example. He starts to approach the Socialist Party. And it's also in this period that he becomes, he starts to write for an important socialist newspaper, The Avanti.
And then in Trento, it's very important, his activity in Trento, because Trento was in the Austro-Hungaric Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And in Trento, which is Italian culturally, He fought for the return of Trento, which is an Italian city, Italian culture speaking, to Italy. And so, just in the beginning, we have another example of his double face personality, internationalism and anti-capitalistic positions against war. And then we have nationalism for the return of Trento to the fatherland. So we have to these two different stream of thoughts in Mussolini's life, which flows together.
Then, Matteo, with the arrival of the First World War, Mussolini's position changes. He had spoken against the intervention in Libya in 1911 and initially had been against Italian intervention in the First World War, in line with the main socialist line, but at a certain point he changes his mind and he becomes in favour of the Italian intervention in the First World War. And that changes Mussolini's direction very much, because that is when he is forced out of the socialist newspaper The Avanti. He founds his own newspaper, Popolo d'Italia, and Mussolini goes to war. Unlike other leaders, let's say, Mussolini did fight in the First World War. He was a corporal. He was wounded on the front. So he added this heroic side to his personal story.
A very important medal for a political leader. And this change, it's quite strange, because the change was quite quick. Some people say now in historical studies, now there are documents that prove that he had been founded by French and England.
So by French change, and English sources, so, to change,
to
his,
change
position.
His position, because they knew he had lots of power. He has
a lot of influence.
And this kind of change was so abrupt. And so we know that this man always thought about his own power. The ideas were changing, but his one idea was very strong. He had to rule, he had to find his way.
He had to reach the power.
Yeah. And so when it was very useful to sustain war, he passed the other side.
Yeah, when it was personally and financially to his advantage, to change position in favor of Italian intervention, he quite quickly changed.
And there was in the Italian left party, there was in socialist party, there were some people that sustained the war against Austria and Germans. So a minority, it was a minority, but quite influent.
And we can say that in the national life of Italy and in the personal life of Benito Mussolini, the First World War is a very important moment, because it, thanks also to the narrative told by an important Italian poet, Gabriele D'Annunzio, the First World War brought us the concept of the vittoria mutilata, the mutilated victory, that saw Italy as a winning partner of the war, but not getting all of the necessary advantages from that war.
Yes, because D'Annunzio thought, when he said vittoria mutilata, mutilated victory, thought about Nike di Samotracia, which is a Greek statue. Whose
head is cut off.
And so it's a beautiful statue, but there's something missing.
It's missing its head.
Yeah. Italy won
the Nike statue, the Nike statue.
Won the first World War in una inutile strage.
Yeah, it was a useless massacre. Yeah.
But he didn't get what they expected to have from
also
this
for
victory.
A great inability of the Italian political establishment at the negotiation table. You know, it seems that, for example, the king, Vittorio Emanuele, didn't even speak good English, so you didn't actually know what was going on a lot of the time.
And
the
when they went to, I think, London to negotiate,
the Italian representatives were humiliated.
So they were put aside. And so this kind of revenge or sort of sorrow for what was happening became one of the strongest ideals of new
fascism. Because then one thing that we need to point out is many of the early fascists, many of the members of the fasci di combattimento, the combat faces, were ex military First World War veterans who were frustrated and disappointed by the results of the First World War. You know, they felt they had suffered and fought and shed blood for a cause, but it was then betrayed.
Yes, and thousands of people fought the First World War, and there was the main part of the first fascist movement, because they were always sustained by Mussolini, who was one of them.
Exactly, he was one of the veterans.
Yeah. Yes, he was a veteran. So the First World War, the frustration of these veterans was the spark that gave rise to the early fascist
movement.
One of the most important things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Without the disappointment of the First World War veterans, perhaps the early fascist movement wouldn't have gained all of that momentum that it did gain in the end. So,
the March on Rome. On Rome was formed by veterans, most of all, and so did the soldiers that were in Rome to stop them. Couldn't move and. Against their companions.
Yeah, yeah. Or I mean, also there, the king refused.
The king refused, but
to ratify
the army that was on the place, they saw
their comrades, their ex-comrades, and so we don't know what would have happened if the king had accepted to fire upon the fascists who were marching on Rome. But we will talk about the March on Rome in a later episode. So we have the post-war period, and we have the famous event of the Presa di Fiume, the taking of Fiume. We will dedicate an episode to Gabriele D'Annunzio and the whole Fiume affair. But that, Matteo, in passing, is another example of Mussolini waiting to see how events unfold and then reacting consequently.
D'Annunzio invaded Fiume, which was not Italy, it was under the Yugoslavia.
Yeah, it was assigned to Yugoslavia in the post-war negotiations.
Yeah, in the post-war negotiations, he decided to move with his comrades to Fiume and took power against this city, and for almost a year. He ruled this
not knowing what to do.
Italian Republic he wanted to return to Italy. And Mussolini looked at the beginning what was happening. But when D'Annunzio became very dangerous for geopolitical
balances.
He left him to his fate.
He didn't jump on the bandwagon in that case.
And it's an example of what Mussolini was. He decided something, and other things he looked what was happening. When things were
in his favor, he would jump on the bandwagon.
When something went wrong, he went away.
Like the March on Rome, and we'll talk about the March on Rome, because it seemed that Mussolini supposedly was there in the middle of the march, but he was sitting back in Milan waiting to see what would happen. But anyway, we'll talk about that. So we said the taking of Fiume by D'Annunzio, another example of Mussolini's let's see how things go, let's sit and wait attitude. But at the same time, he had already become a very influential figure in Italian politics. And if we go to 1919, we see the first foundations of these fasci di combattimento, although already before that they had started to appear, let's say. Well, what are these early fasci di combattimento, Matteo?
The first public representation of fasci di combattimento was in Milan in 1919, in Piazza San Sepolcro, when Mussolini, with some 80, 100 people, he collected these veterans and these some people gained from industrial power and some merchants, entrepreneurs. And he gained these people in this place, in some Piazza San Sepolcro, and he tried to expose his ideas.
Yeah, he started to set out his ideas.
In that period, the danger for industry or entrepreneurs or merchants was the red danger.
Yeah, the red scare. The red scare. The possible Bolshevik drift.
Because it's real. There was lots of strikes in Italy.
There were a lot of strikes, a lot of violence in the factories,
because there was really a movement that...
far left wing movement.
That looked at the Russian Revolution as a...
As an example to follow.
I don't know, maybe in Italy it was not possible to reach the same goal, I hope so. But the people were upset. The workers were exploited. There was a real problem for work in Italy. And so Mussolini knew that that was the right time.
He could play on the fears of the industrial elite. For this sort of Bolshevik drift of Italian politics.
So it's quite strange because the man that in the beginning of his political career was a supporter of a revolutionary movement against
Mussolini.
He
wanted a more revolutionary socialist movement against the more moderate
The industry, the capitalism in the beginning. So in the beginning he wanted to be, he was a revolutionary from a left revolution. Yeah. In that time,
so we're talking no more than 5 years later,
he began the supporter of
the industrial elite
against the red danger.
The red scare and this Bolshevik.
A complete change of... So we know
180 degree turn.
This is Mussolini, a man who can turn everything upside down. He can change his mind every time he needs it, and it comes from a revolutionary socialist to a nationalist right-winged politician. This is Mussolini. This is fascism. And fascism has something of revolutionary and something of
establishment. Yeah, it's a mix of revolutionary establishment in this strange bipolar mix. And in this bipolar mix, it's interesting because we start to have this image of an enemy which is at the same time totally useless, totally inadequate, the scum of the earth, but omnipotent at the same time. And so you wonder how these two things can come together. So, foundation of the Fasci di Combattimento, 1919, and that brings us to the 20s. The fascists participate in the first election without any success at all, but then, exactly 100 years ago, May 1921, we had the first election in which the fascists enter into parliament with 35 delegates. It's an election which sees a great success of the Socialist Party, who have over 130 delegates. But we do see the fascist party or the fascist representatives actually enter into parliament in 1921.
Yes, they enter in a democratic regime, democratic system, and they behave as
members
of parliament. And in the beginning, and they were supported by Catholic and liberals, and there was
so all the forces who feared this left-wing drift of Italian politics.
So they thought that fascism was a sort of war against this danger. In the beginning, they have been supported by the democratic parties in the parliament,
who underestimated the danger.
This is the first mistake.
Yeah,
because the beginning was quite clear. The man was well known. His history was well known.
So they should have known better.
I think it was all clear from the beginning.
And so that sets us up. Next time we'll go back a bit and talk about D'Annunzio and the Impresa di Fiume, the taking of Fiume. And after that, we will take a look not only at Mussolini, because it is absolutely true, as we said, that in a certain sense, at the beginning, fascism was Mussolini and Mussolini was fascism. But he didn't do it alone. So we will be taking a look at some other important members of the fascist movement before we get into the foundation of the fascist party and then see how it took power and then consolidated that power. Thank you for listening to our second episode of the Fascism 100 miniseries. Fascism 100 is researched and recorded by Matteo Marconi and by me, Mike Corradi. Music is by Fabio Debbi. Look him up on his YouTube channel. Thank you very much again for listening, and until next time, keep on resisting.